Welcome to episode 50 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the Lextown, Josh Hopkins. Welcome, Josh. How are you, buddy?
Doing well, Rex. How's everything in Brooklyn there?
All well in Brooklyn. How are things in Austin?
All hot, but I like it hot. Things are good. Things are good.
Josh, we have a big guest today.
Yeah, I can't wait.
We have a big guest today. But before we get into that, what's been going on, buddy? Episode 50. We need famous 50s in sports history. First one to come. You took mine. Ralph Sampson comes right to mind. Mike Singletary. Yeah. And then I can't throw out Mike Scott, the big snowman, played with me at Kentucky, Greenup County. Softballs. He's got softballs, Rex.
yeah. That was ended up being sort of a nickname, and softball.
Snowman, softballs.
Which brings me to one thing topical. There was Austin Reeves has been dubbed the hillbilly Kobe by some people, and he didn't really like the nickname. You should embrace that, because that is a great nickname, and you can build a brand around that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
You remember from the league?
Like all time nicknames?
Yeah.
Iceman and Doc and all that stuff. One of my favorite was, there was a guy that played for the Clippers way back in the day. And he was just sort of I think he played at a D2 college. Picture like Charles Oakley-ish, kind of like. His name was Ken Bannister. And Ken Bannister was not to be with. Like, he would jack you up. Had the greatest, most terrifying name ever. It's the only thing that anybody ever called him. He was Ken the Animal Bannister. Six, nine, 290, just Ken the Animal Bannister. And that's what he played like. Just reckless abandon, you know, would hurt you and not mean to hurt you. Ken the Animal Bannister.
That's a great one. You know, the ones that are like become their names, like Magic or Jay. That's just like,
That's what all timers.
You know, they don't say, "Hey, Irvin."
Yeah, Big George Murison. Big George Murison had a lot of nicknames. His main one that most people called him was Gitsa, which in Romanian apparently means little man. So Gitsa was his main nickname. One that we gave him on one long road trip was King Nasty Ass. Had a really, really bad stomach for a couple of weeks. And I remember he got on the bus at one point and our assistant coach turned to him and said, "Nah, we should call you King Nasty Ass." That stuck for a little while.
That is a great nickname. But you think of nicknames like Karl Malone was the mailman.
Yeah.
And I always thought that Alex Caruso should be called the accountant. He just looks like he's what's he doing?
Yeah, what's he doing out there?
And then always delivers. You could say something. Accountant always crunches the numbers.
Okay, so book club. Have you read anything this week?
You know, this week I didn't read anything. How about you?
I actually went down across the street. Great little place. Got a bite, sat there, beer, came on back.
What'd you read?
That's what I read.
You read what? That you drank a beer and read something?
No, I just drank a beer.
Oh, that's not reading.
What?
That's just going out.
And that's right. I didn't read anything.
Oh, okay. Well, that's been pretty cool.
Buddy, let's get to our guest.
We need to. I'm so excited.
I keep thinking if we were teenagers and getting ready to talk to this person as another fellow teenager at that time, we would be freaking out. Six-time platinum album rapper, founding member of NWA and all other kinds of stuff. We have O'Shea Jackson Sr. What's up, Ice Cube? How are you?
You good, man? What's happening, man? When I heard that, I thought a check was coming right after that. You know what I'm saying? I heard my real name. I'm like, okay, must be a check coming, you know? Yeah, what's happening? What's up with you?
Man, it's so good. Josh and I were just talking earlier about, man, if we'd have been 17 and 19, which is when, what is it? Yeah, 34 years ago today, Straight Outta Compton came out. We were saying at 17 and 19, I was at Kentucky playing basketball. Josh was in high school locally. If we'd have been like, you know what? We're going to talk to Ice Cube today. People would have lost their minds.
We would have lost our minds.
We would have lost our minds. And I know it's a long intro, but I wanted to say this. I want to jump right into this. We'll get into basketball in a minute. It was 34 years ago today y'all came out with that. Josh and I grew up in Kentucky in a little bit of a bubble. And you guys came out with hard hitting, straight to the root type issues. One of them being police misconduct. And my question to you is, when did you know about police misconduct? And why, at such a young age, come out saying things that for people like us in Kentucky that were so controversial? When did you first know that there was an issue with the police?
Man, I think I was probably maybe 7 years old. You know, we grew up, we used to watch Adam 12 and, you know what I mean? Yeah. Chips. And, you know, we used to be into all that kind of stuff. And they just swooped up on the grass and jacked me and my friends. And we like little kids on bikes. And so, you know, it was an intimidation situation. They was just trying to let us know what it was. And basically, this is how it is. And when y'all grow up, you know, we don't want to have to be over here chasing y'all and messing with y'all. And we like sitting on our bikes looking at these dudes like they are aliens. We didn't know what the hell they was talking about, you know. But then from then on, we knew, okay, you know, every time I saw a police car in the neighborhood, it was just a bad feeling. You know, I just felt like if they didn't jack me, they was about to jack somebody in the neighborhood. So, you know, I think they wanted to instill that in us at a young age. You know what I mean? So they was doing stuff like that. They knew we wasn't doing nothing. We was on the grass. We was drinking out the water hose. We was just, you know, making little ramps. And they just tried to, you know, come in there and intimidate us. And from then on, I just knew it was an issue.
And then how, you know, did it just bubble up inside you? And as a prolific artist as you are, but at that point, it just exploded into this art form a genre you created, basically gangster rap, which you called reality rap at the time, but it was coined as gangster rap. Did all that just bubble up and come out as that art as soon as you started rapping?
Well, you know, it's a thing where, you know, I can't say that I invented, you know, gangster rap, reality rap. You know, I had listened to songs from people like Melly Mel, you know what I mean? The Message. I listened to Run DMC say, it's like that, and that's the way it is, and Hard Times. You know, KRS-One, you know, with, you know, records like Criminal Minded, which was just kind of like a visual, you know, Ice-T, King-T, you know, these are are people who came out doing the music at the same time. Now, when it comes to me, you know, I wanted to be a rapper, you know, famous rapper like everybody else. I knew I couldn't say certain things and get played on the radio. So it took me a minute to develop, you know, my style. You know, what I did was I would do records that I was trying to get played, but then I would do hood records that I knew that was just going to go in the neighborhood. You know, me and Dr. Dre would make mixtapes. And what happened was through those tapes, I was able to release. I was able to talk about the things that I saw, the things that I was going through, the things that I felt. So it became a way to actually fight back. So when it was time really to do records like, you know, with NWA and get into that, you know, I knew the records I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to talk about because I had the freedom to do it. You know, Eazy-E said, I don't care if this record ever gets played by anybody on the radio. We got to do these kind of records. And so it became acceptable within our clique to let's try to make records and not just mixtapes. And that's kind of how the ball got rolling.
Steph Curry's record-breaking three-pointer, Jason Tatum's buzzer-beating alley-oop, Ja Morant's poster dunk. NBA Top Shot is where the greatest moments from NBA history are turned into officially licensed digital collectibles. NBA Top Shot has evolved trading cards by making it easier to buy, sell, and collect by removing the hassle of grading, shoeboxes, and shipping fees. You can buy or sell moments in a few clicks and access them at any time on your phone or computer. Your collection is always at your fingertips. Start collecting Top Shot moments in any way you want. Collect rookie moments from future stars like Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham. Collect throwback moments from former NBA stars like Shaq and Allen Iverson. Or collect moments from your favorite team to gain access to exclusive perks. Grab your starter pack today, and Top Shot will give you $20 back to start your collection and pick up some of your favorite moments in the marketplace. Go to about.nbatopshot.com/bballnews and get in the game today. I'm sitting here and I'm going back to, you know, my teenage years or early 20s. And, you know, we were listening to Josh and I were anyway, we were listening to you and to Chuck D and Public Enemy and Ice-T and many of the people in our world thought that all of that music was the same, and it wasn't. And to see, you know, what you guys have gone on to do now, you know, all you guys from Chuck D, and I love the fact that you guys are friends and friendly and respect one another's career. Talk about how your music was different at the time, even from Chuck D and Public Enemy, for people that might not know.
Yeah, you know, Chuck D was really, he was kind of ahead of his time in a lot of ways when it comes to what the music can really do. You know, us, we were trying to make a hit, you know what I'm saying? And then Chuck was actually trying to explain, you know, the culture that we were living in and explain the system that we were being you know, pushed by. So it changed, you know, a lot. You know, it's like, yo, this music can be more than just, you know, what sound cool, what's a hit, but you can actually, you know, try to teach each other in the music. And so I felt like, yo, that was kind of in some ways my job, not just to try to teach and show, you know, Black people, they already knew what was going on, but teach and show everybody what was going on and make everybody understand, you know, why we're doing records like this, why, you know, these situations exist, what's perpetuating them. And try to make a hit at the same time. So, you know, it's a great way to be able to do entertainment, but also be able to tell people how you feel about certain things, and also be able to, you know, be clever and make people say, "Damn, you know, I learned something, but I learned in a very clever way."
Well, what was it? Because you said you were making, like, you know, these at first, Eazy said, I don't care if anyone hears it. You said you were making this, these records for the hood. What was it like when suddenly it exploded and people, 17-year-old me, a white rich kid, it resonated with me in Kentucky and, I, you know, and enlightened me. I didn't know all this, you know, police brutality stuff. And why do you think it resonated outside of the hood?
It was the truth. You know, the truth resonates with everybody. And that's why it worked. When we were trying to make records like, you know, Run DMC and Beastie Boys, and, you know, we was trying to be like the groups that we saw famous, it just didn't work. When we started talking about what was real to us, everybody, you know, understood that this was something real and powerful. And so that's what made it work. It was true to itself. And that's what rap is at its finest. It's true to itself. It's not trying to fit into a box or politically correct, you know, tie of the society. It's really trying to, you know, say what's real, but in a clever way, you know, with beats, rhymes. You know, it's still a sport in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? You gotta know how to flow. You gotta have the right beat. You know, it's not just, you know, talking. It's a clever way to communicate.
35 years, though, in the past 35 years, going from a young, very young man to where we are today, have there been times, I mean, when you put yourself out there socially like you do, and have now for more than three decades, has there been a time or two where you're just like, I don't want to take these, you know, public bullets anymore. You know, this is hard. Have there been moments where you've been like, I don't want to be the one out in front talking all the time, pushing this stuff? It's not my responsibility.
No, you know, it's really about, you know, I feel like I'm a true artist. So, you know, once you paint the picture and put it up, you know, people going to love it or they're going to hate it. You know, people going to say you're a genius or people going to say that, you know, you're an idiot. So, you know, that's really, you know, in the eye of the beholder, so to speak. You know what I mean? As an artist, once you put it up there, it's really up to people how they accept it. So, you know, I know when I say certain things, it could be controversial in some circles. And so, you know, I expect a little pushback. I kind of feel like if I don't get it, then I really didn't say what needed to be said, you know, to be honest, because, you know, everybody thinks they're right. Until somebody can show them that they're not. And so you got to have people always willing to push society in a direction that, you know, it might not want to go, you know what I'm saying? But it might need to go. So, you know, I'm just one man, one opinion. So, you know, people going to have their opinions towards me. That's fine.
Well, speaking of an artist, you're so prolific because now you've become a movie star. You've written movies, you've produced movies, you've produced documentaries. How did you have the balls to be like, I could do all this? Like, were you just born with that? Or did you at some point go, you know, I'm a great artist and I'm just going to seize control of my career?
Well, you know, watching my peers and seeing them be able to do remarkable things and not, you know, pigeonhole myself or let anybody pigeonhole me is the key. You know, my father gave me a solid foundation. That's why, you know, I'm the man you see. But when it comes to opportunities, I realize that I'm in a blessed position. And when an opportunity presents itself, if I'm going to do it, I need to take it serious and I need to do my best. And you know, watching people like John Singleton, who discovered me, you know, I didn't want to be an actor. I didn't even think about it. I just wanted to be the best MC in the world, you know. And so
I'll call you Doughboy.
Yeah, he pulled me in. Doughboy was already written as the character, but he pulled, you know, he pursues me for 2 years to do this movie. You know, he basically says, you know, you can do it, you know, and I'm like, I don't even know he's gonna make a movie, because the only guy I knew that made a movie that was his age was Spike Lee.
Well, Spike.
And he was in New York. So I'm like, dude, you know, this is real. And so he's like, just stay with me, it's real. And he discovered me, and then I realized that was a great opportunity. And then he helped me become a writer. He helped me become a film script writer. And so we just, you know, I'm thankful to John Singleton. You know, he's like an angel who came and took me to a whole new level. And so, you know, I'll always honor him. And the only reason you see me doing so many different things in Hollywood is because John Singleton saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself at the time. So, wow. You know, that's a blessing.
This podcast is brought to you by Branded Bills, the best place online for premium headwear and apparel. Branded Bills has hundreds of designs available, including our popular state collection, where you can show your pride with hats, shirts, hoodies, and more for all 50 states. Are you a company looking to brand your business? Branded Bills also offers custom apparel options that can meet your brand standards with fast turnaround and shipping. To shop or learn more, visit brandedbills.com today.
I just want to say, first of all, No Vaseline is the greatest diss track of all time. And in Straight Outta
Compton. Say it loud for the people in the back, man. Say it loud for the people in the back.
And that movie, Straight Outta Compton, that to me is the best scene, is where they're all sitting around listening to No Vaseline, the other members of NWA, and just like, fuck. But that leads me to I just wanted to say that. That is so awesome. I want to know, what was it like seeing your son play you in a movie and well?
Man, I think the word surreal is used way too much, but I was having an out-of-body experience on a lot of different levels, you know. In making that movie, you know, I learned a lot about NWA. Because, you know, what people don't realize is when I broke up with the group in 89, I virtually had little or no contact with anybody in the group. So I didn't know what they were doing. You know, I didn't know, you know, I wasn't at the pool parties. I wasn't at all the, those wow. little things. So I was discovering a lot of things in making this movie. So that was a trip in itself. You know, I didn't know they sat around listening to No Vaseline, you know what I mean? Until Yella and Ren and people told me this is what happened. So, you know, it was discovery for me. And then to have my son, who was actually the best person for the role, you know, he had to audition with five other Ice Cubes and he killed them. You know what I mean? They had to give it to him. So at the end of the day, it was like, I guess if I played on a team and won the Super Bowl, and then my son comes right behind me and plays for the same team and win the Super Bowl, I guess that would be the feeling. I don't know if anybody has ever felt that in the world, but that's the only thing I can describe, you know, because he came right behind me with the same group, NWA, and became a movie star. I went through NWA, and through that process have done pretty well in the movie game. So it's, you know, John Singleton took me from not being an actor, put me in Boys in the Hood, and the rest is history. F. Gary Gray took O'Shea Jackson Jr. from not being an actor, putting him in Straight Outta Compton, the rest is history. So it's just been an amazing ride as a father, you know, to see it happen.
Well, I got
goosebumps.
For sure, because you're such a big sports fan and aficionado. But I want to come clear about one thing. I played, not with you, against you, basketball in that NBA Entertainment League. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. I was on Morris Chestnut's team for years. We played you. And I just got to say, you can really ball. And a lot of people, a lot, especially in that league, it was all of so many egos, as you can imagine, in Hollywood, a bunch of actors playing. And some of them would just come in and just jack it up. And they were no good just because they were stars. Like, I won't say names like Jamie Foxx or anything, but a lot of people came in, would just shoot it every time like they were Michael Jordan. You were good and you didn't, you wanted to win. You helped your team win. You weren't out there just playing games. So you were a real baller. And it was, when you came in, it was fun because you were playing and not showing out and you were good. So thank you for that. And then how did you become such a giant sports fan?
Oh man, I got to say my brother, you know, my brother CJ, he's my older brother. He's 9 years older than me. And you know what I mean? He would not let me win till I was able to win. So it just gave, you know, that gives you the fight, the fire. He, you know, he wouldn't let me play with him in the backyards with him and his friends because it was too rough. And he was like, no, no, no. So when I got to the age where I could actually play and I was strong enough, you know what I mean? It was just an amazing moment. And he got me into football. He just made sure that I love sports and that I was talented. You know, he helped me at everything, you know, catching, shooting, learning how to defend, learning, you know, just the ins and outs. And then he introduced me to, he said, come here, man, you got to watch this game with me. I'm like 10 years old. What game? It's like Magic is about to play Bird in the NCAA championship. It's the biggest game ever. Then he came a few months later and was like, we got Magic Johnson. I'm like, what? On the Lakers. I'm like, what? So it just got me going, you know, and I've been crazy ever since. Thanks for saying that. You know, I did want to win. You know, I didn't ever understand, you know, why people would shoot every time. You know, I want to get the ball to people and get it going and flowing and let's win the game. And actually, the NBA Entertainment League made me conceive the big three. You know, it's like once a week, guys can heal, guys can recover, guys, you know, going, we went to a few different cities with that entertainment E-League, went to Phoenix and played in front of people. So it was cool. I was like, yo, this could work, you know, if it's elevated. So that's what sparked, you know, even thought about doing something like this.
Well, I went on those trips and did those things and I didn't think of it. Damn. Go ahead, Rex.
I mean, we're in the middle of the fifth year of the big three. I was in before we got on, I was telling Josh, you know, I saw you in Lexington, and I may have met you before that, but in Lexington a few years ago, the first year of the big three, and Chris Mahmoud, formerly Chris Jackson, was there. Yeah. Different players. You know, Kendall Gill was there. And the great thing about it being in Lexington, there were thousands of people there that are Kentucky basketball fans that wouldn't otherwise be able to see, you know, those athletes, you know, former NBA stars, but they would never get an opportunity to just randomly interact with Ice Cube. And you're all around the arena. You're taking pictures, you're meeting people. What has this been like for you to take this, you know, idea that you've come up with? It's televised nationally. You've got legitimate former stars of the NBA. And I want to thank you too for doing this. You know, not everybody saves their money. And you give an opportunity to some guys who maybe not have had some rough times financially, giving them another opportunity to do what they do best in the half court is genius. And it's amazing. But anyway, what's it been like for you taking this thing around the country?
You know, it's been a dream come true in a lot of ways. You know, just being able to put a league together and you know, try to make sure that the American public, you know, I want the world to love it, but I want the American public to embrace the league. Going from city to city, seeing the fans come out, you know, not really understanding the game yet, but just let's see what you got, Cube, and leave the arena and they enjoy themselves. You know, it's a lot different than the NBA game, a lot looser. You can walk down and get an autograph from Dr. J. You know, nobody gonna tackle you. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it was just cool to be able to bring something fresh and new and take it around the country. Now we're in our fifth year. People, you know, really are getting into the intricacies of the leagues, into our new players. You know, it's not just really about retired guys. It's really about players who can play the 3-on-3 game because it's its own thing. You know, you can't be a spot up shooter and that's your only skill and be successful in 3-on-3. You can't just be a defensive guy and be successful in 3-on-3. You have to have all around basketball skills. That's what people are understanding. And so it's just been a great ride. You know, it hasn't been easy. You know, I ain't gonna lie. You know, we hopefully we make it look easy, but for the most part, it's been the most fulfilling I've had, you know, fulfilling experience I've had throughout my whole career.
Man, it looks fantastic. So just so you know, what we're watching, the product that we're seeing, the public is seeing, it looks like an Ice Cube production. Just so you know, I wanted to get that out. But the watching these guys courtside over the last few years, has there been a guy or two that you're like, shit, I didn't know he was that good?
Man, all of them are amazing players, man. Like, you know, just seeing the little tricks of the trade that they have to get loose. We started off with two refs, but they had so many tricks outside of vision. We was like, we need three refs because, yeah, man, they got every little, you know, trick of the trade. So you're watching craftsmen. You're watching guys who have honed their skills. It's not easy to get loose in the big three. You know, it's you know, in a lot of ways, you know, you have to be able to break your opponent down,
yeah,
or pass it around and get open. So, you know, you have to use every little trick, you know, to be successful when they're doing it. So to see it, you know, the camera don't catch it all, but
yeah,
when you watch it, you're like,
it's hand to hand. It's hand to hand combat out there most of the time. And you can see why NBA referees get fooled so often, right?
Without a doubt. You know, it's easy to miss a call. You know, it's everything happening so fast. And 3-on-3 is rougher than 5-on-5. You know, you can't have a ticky-tack game. You got to let guys battle in the paint, and they do.
Congratulations on that success too, because I thought at first I was like, well, Ice Cube is such a businessman. I bet he's invested in like doctors that fix Achilles tendons, because this is going to be a lot of problems in the big three. These guys, I have to know, we're coming up on the NFL season and you're a Raiders fan. We all know you did your 30 for 30. What do you, straight out of LA, or yeah. What do you feel like for this season coming up? I mean, you got Davante Adams now. What how you feeling?
Man, I feel like it's a good team, but look at the division. Like, the AFC West is the hardest division in football on paper, without a doubt. So, you know, it's not like I'm like, you know, happy to go through that gauntlet. But I feel like if the Raiders can get through that gauntlet of the AFC West, then we are battle hard and we are ready to take the next step deep into the playoffs, hopefully the Super Bowl. So, you know, we made it to the playoffs last year. Now it's time to get a win and another win and keep this thing moving. Keep it moving in the right direction.
So I saw a little while ago, you still, and I want to be sure, you still think the Lakers need to move LeBron?
I never said that. I never said that. You know, the Lakers, I think, don't be lying on me, Greg. I think the Lakers, you know, the Lakers had a rough season last year. It's not the first time we've had a rough season when we've brought in a lot of different stars and personalities. But if they had to run it back this year, I wouldn't be mad. You know, I think they have a way better outcome this year than they had last year. They all have a lot to prove. They might have thought it was going to be easy and kind of dialed it in last year, gotten cruise control. But if they had to run it back, I wouldn't be like, oh, man, why we didn't get Kyrie, blah, blah, blah.
Speaking of that, go ahead.
There's crazy rumors and people speculate, and it's just fun in a lot of ways. But one of them was that the Lakers could package AD and Russ, send them to Brooklyn for Kyrie and Durant, plus give them give Brooklyn a first round pick. Would you support that move? Would you do that if you were the GM?
I don't like to get into everybody's business because being in the sports business myself, I understand how it is. I'm going to support whatever the front office of the Lakers do because they've always, at the end of the day, brought LA a championship. I ain't going to start second guessing them. You know what I mean? I know when the smoke clears, the Lakers will be where we're supposed to be, and that's, you know, NBA champs. You know, will it happen this year, next year, the year after that? Who knows? But I know we'll be back.
I'm with you on that.
Do you have a Lakers Rushmore?
I mean, Magic for sure. Kobe, Jerry West, and let's see. Man, that last one is hard.
That's hard.
Last one is hard. Oh, my God. The last one would be a three-headed monster.
Okay.
Last one would be it'd have Shaq, Kareem, and Wood on it. You know, that last head would just be three.
Yeah. A lot of stuff in there, but I get it. Yeah.
I get it. Q, man, what's your favorite movie all time?
Jaws.
Great, great answer. Love that movie.
It's kind of a perfect movie in so many ways.
It is. I love it too that they couldn't get the shark to work, and that's what made the movie so good because they were going to show it early, but the fact that you didn't see it for so late is what made the movie. It's one of the best of all time. That's a great answer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a movie where. I seen people jump up and cheer in the movie theater, you know, like it was a, you know, a game, you know, it was like winning shot or home run, you know, it's just a perfect movie to me.
Why has nobody remade The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh?
Because the first one was so good, man. Can't mess with perfection.
When I saw Jaws, my parents took me way too early. I don't know what they were thinking. And I watched with my feet up on the seat the whole time because I was scared to dangle them down. What about front row center to watch any concert or any artist or anything dead or alive?
Wow. Oh, man. Ooh, that's a hard one. Guess you got to go with Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Jackson.
we're gonna let you get out of here, Q. Can't thank you enough, man. This has been an honor, a privilege, and a big fan, and thank you for doing this.
Appreciate it, man. Tell everybody to watch our playoff games when we're coming live from Tampa this week. some good games. Appreciate it. Watch the big three later.
Thanks for all the smiles and stuff I've learned from you and in every genre. It's been in a real honor and pleasure to have you on, man.
Appreciate it, Josh. Appreciate you, man. Take it easy.
What?
That was cool.
What?
Oh, I mean.
Think about that.
So in so many forms of art and society and that was, I could have talked to him for 2 days asking him questions.
No question. I mean, the guy is just, I would catch myself looking at you on the screen and looking at him and thinking about 17-year-old you talking to him at, you know, when we were back that age. Just a surreal sort of experience, right?
It really, really was. Like we were talking before, like I remember when Straight Outta Compton came out, you know, and I'm being 17 and riding around with my friends, and I, you know, introduced them to that and put in the tape, cassette tape, and, you know, hearing Fuck the Police and just blew my mind, mm-hmm. and educated me to a life that I was so polar opposite of, and it broadened my horizons. I mean, and that's what art should do.
With you completely. And the fact that, you know, at the time, you go back and this is a whole new genre, and we've seen so many people come up, try, not make it, all of that. These guys were taking such a stand socially at when they were teenagers, right? Yeah. And it's just amazing in society, because when they, I didn't get to touch on it, but when Chuck D and when Ice Cube and these artists started doing what they were doing, society, we had only seen really, you know, one other entertainer in our life who was Black be outspoken like that, and that was Muhammad Ali. And he was still alive at the time in the mid 80s, wasn't doing great, but still for these guys to take and put themselves out there socially at such a young age, where if the public doesn't like it, or, you know, you get pushed out for whatever reason, your career's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you, okay, well, I'll just rebrand and try to do something else. Your career's over if it doesn't, you know, if you flame out.
Yeah. Right? It's just amazing that he was able to also evolve the way he, you know, becomes a movie star. Like I said, he wrote, he produced, he directed his own film, you got to be so effing smart
and talented and driven. I mean, you know, driven.
Yeah. That was, I'm going to remember that for a long time, Rex.
Me too, buddy. Well done. So much fun. Let's do it again next week. Want to?
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll be back. That was episode 50 on the Rex Chapman Show with super dope Josh Hopkins right here on basketballnews.com.